This is a special program on Multicultural 1600 AM, so please stay tuned.
Listen to the Portuguese American Hour on Multicultural 1600 AM. Hear in-depth conversation about Portuguese culture and learn everything happening in the valley within the Portuguese community from 4 to 5 p.m. on Multicultural 1600 AM.
And welcome to another one of your daily doses of the Portuguese American Hour. I am Justice Neves. With me, as always, Dennis Borges.
Hello there, and you've gotten used to that DD, daily dosage of the Portuguese American Hour. Here we are. We're happy to have you. We're on every day, Monday through Friday, from 4 until 5 p.m. We have another exciting show for you. We will have a guest from the Portuguese American community, someone who is widely known throughout the valley. We will also have our segment for poetry and our segment for the recommended book. And we will end, as always, just as with some information about the Portuguese American community throughout the valley, and also some information from our from Fresno State, where all things that are Portuguese is Portuguese American Hour is, as everyone knows, a product of the Portuguese Beyond Borders Institute at California State University, Fresno. But I think we are going to start with our musical guests. We kind of have musical guests now, yeah, every single show. And we have a group from the Azores Islands. As many of you who are of Portuguese background, those of you who aren't but have heard our program, the Azores are a group of islands in the Atlantic North where most people who are of Portuguese background in the state of California, not just the valley, throughout the whole state, can trace their roots back to the Azores. Portuguese Americans in the state of California are a little over 90% from the islands of the Azores. There's a group called Tons de Azul. That's the Portuguese for tonalities of blue tonalities, or the blue colors, and blue because of the ocean that surrounds the Azores, very blue ocean, yeah, the blue sky, and even the blue hortensias or hydrangeas, which are the flower of the Azores. They're a group of four young people, and they recorded this a few years ago, but they're still young. They were very young then. They were in their, I believe, their early 20s. They're probably now in their mid-30s. That's pretty young.
Yeah, that's still young.
Yeah, that's very young. To me, that's a baby. So they will sing a song for us. They will present their musical guests for today. So we're hoping to have two or three songs from them throughout this coming hour. So do stay tuned. They have some beautiful voices. It was a project done by the Azorean government, cultural segment of the Azorean government, with these young people who took some traditional Azorean music, which is very folkloric. They put in there some different instruments because the Azorean folklore music is usually string-based. They put some other musical instruments in there, and they've taken a little bit different approach to the music itself. In other words, they've done a little bit of creativity to these songs that are hundreds of years old. The first song we're going to listen to, for example, is called Chamateia, which is a mixture of a couple of songs, Chamarrita, which is a famous Azorean song, and Sapateia, which is also a famous Azorean song. It's the song that ends folk dances. So they've combined the Chamarrita with the Sapateia. It came out with this called Chamateia. The words are by an Azorean author by the name of António Souza from the island of São Miguel, and the music is from one of the Azores' best-known musicians, Luís Alberto Betancourt. Luís is an excellent musician, an excellent songwriter, and an interpreter himself. We will have him as a musical guest here pretty soon in the Portuguese American Hour as well. So let's listen to Tons de Azul and the song Chamateia to kick off our program today. How's that?
Sounds good.
All right, here we go.
Que a ilha encerra, bebo as rimas deste canto, no jantar serve de ceia, e mesmo a dor mais sentida dá lugar à sapateia. Oh meu bem, oh chama Rita, meu alento e vai e vem, vou embarcar nesta dança sapateia. Oh meu bem. Se a sapateia não der para acalmar minha alma inquieta, estou para o que der e vier nas voltas da chamarrita. Chamarrita sapateia, eu quero é contradizer o aperto desta bruma que às vezes me quer vencer. Oh meu bem, oh chama Rita, meu alento e vai e vem, vou embarcar nesta dança sapateia. Oh meu bem, oh meu bem, oh chama Rita, meu alento e vai e vem, vou embarcar nesta dança sapateia. Oh meu bem.
And that was Shamateia, a famous song from the islands of the Azores, in the words by Antonio Souza, and the music by Luiz Alberto Bittencourt, which is well known throughout the archipelago. And talking about the Azores, talking about the Portuguese-American world, that's what we do here in the Portuguese-American Hour, a service of the Portuguese Beyond Borders Institute at California State University of Fresno. We have on the line our guest. We are excited to have him on. He is a friend from, lives in the central to north part of the valley in the city of Turlock, Professor Elmano Costa, who has been in education for many, many years. But we'll talk exactly about his story. First and foremost, Elmano, thank you so much for taking time to visit with us and to be with us on the Portuguese American Hour. Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon. Glad to be here.
Well, we're glad to have you. And let's talk a little. Let's start from the beginning. Let's go back a few years. I know you're a young guy, just celebrated your 39th birthday, more or less, but like me. But let's talk a little bit about for the listening audience who does not know, and many of our folks who are of Portuguese ancestry have heard your name, but those who aren't have not, or others who are and may have not heard of who Professor Elmano Costa is. Let's talk a little bit about your immigration story, if you don't mind. When did you come to America? I know you came at a very young age, and if you don't mind giving us that little bit of a trajectory.
Sure. I was born on the island of Pesteira. I immigrated in 1966 when I turned actually. It was an interesting story. We were supposed to leave on my birthday. It turned out because of plane ticket problems, we were delayed by a couple of weeks. So I have lived in central California most of my time in the United States, mostly in Escalon, and then I came to Turlock to go to the university, and I've been in Turlock ever since.
And so your story from the island of Terceira to the Central Valley, or to the San Joaquin Valley, to California, like many of other who are of Portuguese ancestry, you came with your parents, correct?
Correct. I actually, have a story which is not so uncommon. My mother was born in Gustin.
Ah.
And so when she was 7 years old, my grandfather, due to mostly health reasons, although it happened to be 1929, the first year of the Great Depression. But his was mostly for health reasons. He decided to go back to live in Portugal, took my mother back, And as I tell people, my mother was an illegal immigrant in Portugal for 40-some years because she never did what she was supposed to legally do, register as a foreigner. She was never a Portuguese citizen. My grandfather never registered her, and she lived, she married, she had children. And then, you know, as she had four boys, to be exact, and then... as we started to come of mature age, my oldest brother was 17. Then they had to make a hard decision. It was stay in the Azores and know that every one of us was going to end up fighting a colonial war in Africa or come back to the United States. And my parents have always sworn that that was the number one reason they decided to come to California. But there was also economics. As we know, in the 1960s, the Azores were... and all of Portugal was still in very difficult times. Mm-hmm. And the United States, of course, was a land of opportunity. In fact, a lot of research will tell us that the late 60s were the best economic times in the United States, in the sense that we had more economic equality, more opportunity. And so they came, they went, did the Portuguese thing. They went to milk cows. You know, I milked cows as I was going through high school and then through college, and that had the opportunity to go to school and took that opportunity, and my parents supported me and supported my youngest brother, and so we have a family of four. Two didn't go to college because they came almost of working age, two went to college, and two became teachers.
And that's interesting. Both of you became teachers. Wow. The idea of going to college, you know, as you said, in the 1960s for Portuguese-American, in your case, you'd been here a few years, but not that many years. I don't think you had too many other immigrants who were attending college at the same time that you were, probably. There were a handful of you, if that.
And that was, I think, at the point that I went to Cal State University, Stanislaus, which was 1978.
Mm-hmm.
When I went there, we actually tried to form a Portuguese club and did succeed in forming a club. Hmm. But there was a handful of us. I think there were maybe seven or eight of us who formed the club. And this was out of a student body in those days of around 3,000 students. So there must, you know, there were obviously Portuguese Americans.
Right.
But of Portuguese of first generation, there were not many of us, you know. It was a small group.
What made you go into education? What kind of enticed you into the field of education?
You know, it wasn't that I set out with that as a goal. I went to college. All I knew is I liked to study history. I majored in history. And in my last year of college, I suddenly had this feeling of, what do I do with a history degree? And as we all know, there are not a lot of jobs in history unless you go into teaching. And I think, quite frankly, it was probably more of a coincidence than a plan that I thought of going into teaching. I certainly had some friends of the family who were in that field, but I also had others who'd gone through college and went into business. Mm-hmm. But I somehow thought teaching would be good, and went into it and stayed with it for 33 years or so.
And you went, but you've had a distinguished career. You went through teaching, administration, teaching at the college. Tell us a little bit about that trajectory as well, if you don't mind.
Well, I, like everyone, I started teaching at a junior high school. I had a major in history, but I had minored in mathematics. And that summer that I finished my teaching credential, I decided that I had worked hard and I was going to go to Portugal and enjoy myself. So I took 3 months, went to a summer program at the University of Coimbra, and that was about 6 weeks, and then went to the Azores and spent another 6 weeks, and got back to California in mid-October with a plan that I was going to substitute teach and then look for a job the following year. Well, when school saw that I had a teaching credential in math, they forgot about the fact that I had history. Nobody really cared about history teachers. There are too many of us, especially at a time when we're actually closing schools in California.
Mm-hmm.
And so the math got me a job in the middle school. And I did that for a couple of years. And then after doing it for a couple of years, I jokingly tell people I realized that only parents can love kids at that age. You know? And so I I had the second year that I was in junior high, I actually had the opportunity to work with sixth graders and thought, boy, this is really what I like. So I was able to get my multiple subject teaching credential, went into elementary teaching, taught for fifth grade for 4 years, and then for the year after, I became the English Learner Director for the Atwater School District. In that time, I had earned my master's in school administration and then got a job as a school principal in Delhi and was there for 8 years, then went into Livingston for a couple more years. And then in that time, I had earned my doctorate and the job came open at the university in a teacher education program, and I applied for it. Actually, I should say the truth is I was kind of recruited for it. But, got the job and spent 22 years at the university before I retired. Now I am officially retired, but I retired only in name because I retired and went back, and I still work half-time for the university.
So you're still in the teacher program, the teacher preparation program at Cal State Stanislaus.
Correct.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit now, shifting into the Portuguese American community. Besides, your career in education all these years, over three decades, you've also been heavily involved in the Portuguese American community, especially throughout the valley, and certainly in the Turlock, Hillmar, Modesto, that area, Merced and Stanislaus counties, as well as other surrounding counties. How did you get involved volunteering for these different organizations that you're involved in? We'll talk a little bit about each organization, and I may miss one or two, and I'll ask you to help me out there. But what made you want to get involved in the Portuguese American community? Because you could have just been in education all your life without having that foot in the community, obviously.
Yeah, and I've actually thought about that a lot, and I think I probably have to attribute that to my parents, who, back in the Azores, were always very involved in their freguesia, in their town government, in their town activities, mostly through church, but also in civil related kind of things. I always remember my parents as somebody who always said that we had a duty to help others, mm-hmm. and so. That, I think, growing up was a value that they certainly instilled in me and that they modeled for me. And so as I came out of college, of course, I was very involved in Our Lady of the Assumption Church. And there was also very much there this spirit of, helping our community. We were still, you have to remember in the 70s, we were still, we're at a stage where many people had been here for 10 years or less. And so there were still a lot of new immigrants who were adapting to American culture, American things, who didn't understand the language, who needed assistance. And so that spirit, I think, was inculcated in me and stayed with me all these years.
And so involved in the Portuguese American community, and before we get into that aspect and talk a few of the organizations that I know you've been deeply committed to it, one of the things that has changed, obviously, when you began teaching, as you said, there was just a handful of students who were immigrants anyway, attending Cal State Stanislaus and other universities as well throughout the valley and throughout the state. But today, El Manu, I think that the Portuguese American community has really taken big steps in having people in education. I think of any field, and I'm sure we're in all kinds of fields, but there are in the South Valley, and I'm sure in your area as well, there are just lots and lots of Portuguese Americans in education. That's changed tremendously. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Oh, no, very, very much so. In fact, I recently had, as you guys did, a visit by the president of the Flood Foundation, Rita Fadden, and I remember telling her at a luncheon we had here that I think nowadays 98% of Portuguese American females go on to college education. And I can't prove that number, but I would say it's a very close to that. And within the males, it hasn't quite reached that level yet, but it's probably up in the 70% range. So I would say not only have we caught up with the general American population, we've probably exceeded in certain areas. And certainly in teaching, we have not only done well. We've done exceedingly well. I look at the school districts around us, and we have two superintendents who are Portuguese Americans, Turlock and Hilmar. We had the county superintendent of Merced for several years who was Portuguese American, Steve Gomes. We have assistant superintendents who are of Portuguese ancestry, and we have school principals. It's actually hard to count because there are so many of them.
Correct.
And I actually forgot another superintendent, LU at Keys School District. So they're all around, and the American saying is the cream rises to the top. So that must be an indication of the work ethic and what Portuguese Americans have done as they've gone into this field of education. But I also know, as I look around, that, you know, we look at banks in Turlock, for example, several branch managers are Portuguese Americans. We look at, one of the largest independent insurance companies, Rico Fitzer. They're Portuguese American. And, of course, we're not even talking about the dairy industry or the sweet potato industry, which is, again, controlled by Portuguese Americans in our area. So I think we've done exceedingly well in whatever field we've gone into.
I agree. And we're going to continue speaking with Professor Elmanu Costa, who is from the California State University Stanislaus. We've did a little bit of a journey through his life and also through education. We're going to talk about some specifics in the Portuguese American community in the Turlock area with some of the organizations. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with the second segment of the Portuguese American Hour, a product of the Portuguese Beyond Borders Institute at California State University, Fresno. Be right back.
Listen to the Portuguese American Hour on Multicultural 1600 AM. Hear in-depth conversation about Portuguese culture and learn everything happening in the valley within the Portuguese community from 4 to 5 p.m. on Multicultural 1600 AM.
Faz sábado, quinta-feira, homem da China. Subi pela rocha abaixo, homem da China. Vai de banda, olé, homem da China. Vai de banda, olé, homem da China. Sentei-me num pau de pedra, homem da China. Montei numa égua macho, homem da China. Vai de banda, olé, homem da China. Vai de bandolé, homem da China. Todo rapaz que se casa, homem da China, deve ter um pau a canto, homem da China. Vai de bandolé, homem da China. Vai de bandolé, homem da China. Para benzer sua sogra, homem da China, quando ela tiver quebrante, homem da China. Vai de banda, vai de bandolé, homem da China. Vai de banda, vai de bandolé, homem da China. Olhos negros, negros, só.
Listen to the Portuguese American Hour on Multicultural 1600 AM. Hear in-depth conversation about Portuguese culture and learn everything happening in the valley within the Portuguese community from 4 to 5 p.m. on Multicultural 1600 AM.
And welcome back to the Portuguese American Hour. Again, I'm Justin Neves here with Dennis Borges. We still have our first guest on the line.
That's right, Professor Elmano Costa from the Turlock area, professor at California State University, Stanislaus. Elmano, let's talk a little bit about the organizations that you've been so deeply committed to. As you mentioned before we took a break, you got really involved because of your parents, as far as they, you know, being mentors in that aspect. That it was important for them to be involved and to give back to their communities. And you mentioned that one of the aspects that first got you involved was the parish. Tell us a little bit about the Our Lady of the Assumption, because it's kind of a unique parish, a unique church center in all of California for the Portuguese American community.
It is unique in a sense that it was started from scratch by the immigrants who came in the 1960s and 70s. And it started really not as a church, but as a cultural center. And from there, it evolved into being a church, and then, it's always been different because it's not a geographic parish. And the Catholic Church, as most people know who follow that, there's geographic regions, and you belong to a certain parish in your geographic region.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this parish was not at all set up that way, and in fact, years later, it was finally kind of designated as a parish serving the Portuguese community, no matter where they live. So it's, I think what makes it unique is it started with a bit of a missionary zeal, if you will, in the sense that they saw, you know, the founders saw themselves as starting something new, something to help the Portuguese community, something to keep the culture going. So it was a church, but it never stopped being a cultural center. And it is today the place where you go to watch carnival dances, or you go to eat supers, or you go to church. It has all those aspects.
And within the church, and within the parish, I should say, there are an amalgam of organizations that either are directly or indirectly associated with the parish. One of them is a unique organization as well, which is Valer, V-A-L-E-R. Tell us a little bit about that organization. I know you've been involved on the board, and it's actually, if I'm not mistaken, a social services to help some of the folks, especially the elderly in the area who may need different kinds of services. So how did Valer come about, and how has its role has been in the Portuguese-American community in the Turlock area?
Yeah, VALID stands for Valley Area Living Enabling Resources. It is in what we call a social service type of a referral agency. So we're, as we tell people, we don't have any money to give anyone. We don't have a clothes closet. We don't have those things. But we try to connect people with the existing services, mostly by helping overcome the barriers of language or the barriers of education and those things. And I think VALID came about by, quite frankly, serendipity. And it was that I was invited to attend a meeting in Washington, D.C. in 1999, where they were preparing for the 2000 census. And the focus of that meeting was census. But I had the opportunity there of meeting someone from the J.B. Fernandez Memorial Trust. And for those who don't know J.B. Fernandez, he was also a Portuguese immigrant of Madeiran background, and he immigrated to the Caribbean, started a rum business, and became extremely successful, so much so that when he passed away, he left a foundation with millions of dollars. And at that point, they were supporting some of these social services. So I met the person, we discussed some ideas, I wrote a proposal, submitted it, and they agreed to fund it. And in fact, for multiple years, somewhere around 15 years or more, they were almost the sole funders of this organization. So our whole point, and we don't turn anyone away, whether they're Portuguese or not, but mm-hmm. we are targeting Portuguese speakers and Portuguese people. And so when someone doesn't comes with a problem, whatever it may be, a citizenship problem, you know, they're homeless or whatever the situation, we try to get the person to the right service. We dig up to whatever paperwork needs to be done. We help them complete it. We take them to meet with the right people if they need to. We help them do that. We've organized many citizenship days. We've organized voter registration drives. We bring in speakers from the various social services. We do health fairs. We try to bring services to the Portuguese community. And when we can't bring them to the those services to the community, we take people to those services.
And Village basically is housed in the parish itself, physically.
Right. And now that J.B. Fernandez is no longer funding it, we do get a little bit of funding from the Azores government through their director for the overseas communities, but it is a small amount of the funding. So actually the parish has now assumed responsibility for most of that funding.
Correct. And you mentioned a little bit about the getting people involved in the census and getting people, of course, involved in participating in their civic duty as far as voting. You were part of an organization that existed for many years as well. It was not just an organization for Turlock. It was a national organization, the Portuguese American Citizenship Project, if you don't mind spending a few minutes telling us a little bit about that.
Yeah, actually, I have to give credit to the person who started that organization, who was Jim McGlinchey. And I know the name doesn't sound Portuguese, but his mother's Portuguese. His father was not. So he was, half American and all Portuguese, because his heart was definitely Portuguese. He was a U.S. diplomat at one point, was actually stationed in Lisbon, and I think that really awakened his Portugueseness far more than I think anything else. And when he got done and retired from his career, he decided he wanted to devote his retirement years to the community, and particularly because he grew up in New England. And I think people who don't know the Portuguese communities in California versus New England, I think there is one distinct difference, and that is that I would say in California, Portuguese are generally seen as successful people. They do well. We talked about earlier how they do well in business. They do well in education. But in the East Coast, the history hasn't been quite as rosy. And so he saw how that community was treated, and he wanted to empower that community. And through a grant from the Loser American Development Foundation, he was able then to start this project. And I met him in 1999 at that census meeting in Washington, D.C. He was just getting started. He hadn't been to California. So we then, you know, he came out. We started meeting with people in California. And I'd say that, you know, for several years, for over a decade, in fact, there will be a book coming out here in the next few months that details the history of that project. But we were able to show, and I think this was the most important, if nothing else, to show that Portuguese Americans actually vote in greater percentages than many other ethnic communities. So we're not non-voters. We are voters. We are involved, even though people don't always perceive us in that particular way.
And so the Portuguese American Citizenship Project was, as I mentioned, a national organization. So it was, as you mentioned, particularly to empower what he saw in the East Coast, but it had a stronghold in California as well, correct?
Correct. In many parts of California, there was representation. And, you know, the biggest, I think where people saw it the most, let me put it that way, where people saw the project the most was around election time, when it seemed like it was the local church that was sending a card out reminding people to vote. But actually, it was the church, but in coordination with, and in many cases with funding from, the Portuguese American Citizenship Project. And so there was a lot of voter registration drives, there was a lot of turnout to vote efforts, and there was a lot of counting of how many people turned out. And when we had those numbers, we were able to take those numbers to many elected officials and say, look, in your district, you have this many registered Portuguese Americans. And out of those that are registered, this percentage voted. And that was a significant portion of who elected you for office. So that They made him aware because, believe it or not, even in Turlock, some of our elected officials were not even that aware of what an extensive community we had. And when I remember going into the office of Senator Monteith in Sacramento with graphs, with those numbers, and he starts looking at them, and it's like the next year he made sure that his Woman of the Year was a Portuguese American. he was like, wow, you know, there is a significant number here, which I could see in his face that he didn't even realize, you know, other than the fact that he had been an agricultural salesperson, and he knew that there were a lot of Portuguese in the dairy industry. But beyond that, he really had no idea of how many people there were and what percentage of voters there were.
And Elbandu, lastly, in our last few minutes that we have of our conversation, again, thank you so much for taking this time to spend with us. I'd like to talk a little bit, if we may, about the Education Foundation. You can give me the full name of it, Central California. I'll mess it up. I'll let you do it. But it's a very important foundation in Turlock as well, and throughout the Central Valley. For its role in education, certainly in bringing together different organizations, if you don't mind talking about that, because I think it's very unique when you bring together different organizations to contribute, so the foundation can in turn give scholarships to many, many deserving students.
Yeah, it's the Portuguese Education Foundation of Central California, or sometimes just called PEFCC. P-E-F-C-C. And this started some now 27 or so years ago, and it was a group of us, most of us were in education, and we looked at our community and we thought, what is it that we need the most? And the thing that came to us was we needed to promote higher education amongst our students. And so we set out with the number one goal of making sure more Portuguese American young people would go on to the university and get degrees in university. We also obviously set out to promote the teaching of the Portuguese language and promoting our culture in general. And the question always is, how are you going to promote education? And one of the things that was very clear 27 years ago, I don't know that it's as needed today, but it definitely was needed then, was the fact that many of these young people were from families who were immigrants, who were just buying their houses, who were just trying to get their lives going in this country. And so it was, you know, the idea of giving scholarships became one of the drivers. And we started, quite frankly, with, I think, one scholarship the first year. And now we're doing close to 40 scholarships a year. We're doing about $25,000 a year. And our funding, and I think what made it unique and what you were referring to, is that about a third of our funding comes from us you know, getting other organizations, other Portuguese organizations, especially Holy Ghost celebrations, that we have some businesses as well who contribute toward that scholarship fund so that we didn't have a pool and we can then turn around and disperse that amongst the students who are pursuing higher education.
Yeah, it's a wonderful event. I would invite people, not just in the Turlock area, not just in Stanislaus and Merced County, but throughout counties, I should say, but throughout the San Joaquin Valley and beyond, to attend the event. It's always in November, I believe, the third Friday of November.
The third Friday of November.
Yeah. And it's a wonderful event, not just because of always, of course, the good camaraderie and seeing the Portuguese American community together, but it's impressive to see the various organizations, Holy Ghost, Our Lady of Fatima, Santo Cristo, etc., all the different organizations come through and announce that they are collaborating with the Education Foundation and giving these scholarships. So
I will tell you, Dinesh, if I may,
yes,
just one little tidbit.
Please.
With that. We also recognize at that banquet an Educator of the Year, a Student of the Year, a Business of the Year, and just kind of a Lifetime Citizenship Award. One of the interesting things is when we started giving those awards, our Student of the Year, in fact, I believe our first one, was somebody who finished high school as a valedictorian. Mm-hmm. And that seemed like and it was very much a worthy. Then eventually it was like people who were finishing the university and stood out with some higher achievement in their BA degree. And most recently, most of our Students of the Year have been people earning doctorate degrees. And that also speaks a little bit about the community, that we're not just getting bachelor degrees anymore. We're getting degrees. We're getting doctorates in molecular biology. We're getting doctorates in mathematics. We're getting doctorates in physics. We're getting doctorates in some very difficult fields. And so our students are doing exceedingly well when they go on into higher education.
Yes, indeed. I agree. Elbanu, thank you so much for spending time. You have to come back because we have a lot of other things that we'd like to discuss. So promise me that maybe in a couple of months we can have you back and talk about some other things. Our time is about up. The time. I appreciate it. I know it was a longer interview than you probably anticipated, but it was quite fascinating for our listeners. So I'm sure it was quite fascinating for our listeners and for myself as well. Thank you again, and best of luck to you, happy holiday season. Boas festas to you and your lovely wife, Albertine, and your children, and continued success. And thank you for all you do for the Portuguese-American community throughout the state of California. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Denise. It was an honor to be with you.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate it. That was Professor Elbanu Costa from California State University, Stanislaus, just up the road from Fresno State here, mm-hmm. about 2 hours or so from this area. A big area that has lots and lots of Portuguese Americans, many of them listening to the Portuguese American Hour every day from 4 to 5. So we're taking our second break, correct?
Yeah.
And so we'll be right back with our third and last segment of the Portuguese American Hour here on KGST AM 1600 Multicultural Radio.
Listen to the Portuguese American Hour on Multicultural 1600 AM. Hear in-depth conversation about Portuguese culture and learn everything happening in the valley within the Portuguese community from 4 to 5 p.m. on Multicultural 1600 AM. Listen to the Portuguese American Hour on Multicultural 1600 AM. Hear in-depth conversation about Portuguese culture and learn everything happening in the valley within the Portuguese community from 4 to 5 p.m. on Multicultural 1600 AM.
Welcome back to the Portuguese American Hour. We are about to go into our last segment, including our book of the week and poem of the week.
That's right. And we'll start with our book of the week. We'll go to a song and then we'll come back to the poem of the week. Is that okay with you, Master Justice?
Oh.
Yeah, he's the master here. I'm just a follower. Ismael and I just do whatever Justice tells us to do. The book of the week is by José Saramago, which actually is our only Nobel for the Portuguese language, which we mentioned here actually about 4 or 5 weeks ago. Another one of his books. This one is called Names, All the Names. Okay, and so it is a book that is really quite interesting because it is one of Saramago's classics now. It was one of his last books. Saramago is a writer who only started to write at the age of 50. So prior to that, he worked at various different jobs, but he started to write or to publish books, I should say, at the age of 50. And he published a few of them, and then he stopped for a while, and he published a lot of them in his late 60s, 70s, and into his 80s when he passed away a few years ago. So the book, All the Names, is basically about a man named José, or Joe in English, who is a low-grade clerk in the city's central registry, where the living and the dead share the same shelf space. He's a middle-aged bachelor. He has no interest in anything beyond the certificates of birth, marriage, divorce, and death. And that are his daily preoccupations, those things. In the evenings and on weekends, he works on bringing them up to date by clipping his files and of the famous, the rising stars, and those who are notorious in one way or another in society. But when he comes across the birth certificate of an anonymous young woman, he decides that this cannot have been mere chance, that he has to discover more about her. Under this mystified eye of the register, a godlike figure whose name is spoken only in whispers, the now obsessed Senor José sets off to follow the thread that leads him to the unknown woman, but as he gets closer to a meeting with her, he discovers more about her, about himself than he really would have wished to. The loneliness of people's lives, the effects of chance and moments of recognition, the discovery of love, however tentative, once again, José Saramago has written, indeed, a very timeless piece, because more than just a lonely man, it talks about how lonely, indeed, most of lives are as we go through life ourselves. So he discovers a lot of great things, and it's worth reading. It's been translated to English. It was written, obviously, in Portuguese. It's been translated to English, and it's available, readily available anywhere. Again, it's called All the Names by José Saramago. That's our recommendation from the Portuguese Beyond Borders Institute and the Portuguese American Hour here on Multicultural Radio. And from here, we'll our song of the week, not a song of the week, actually our musical guests, I should put it that way. We have various songs. The guests are Tons de Azul, it's a group from the Azores. We had Chamateia. We will now have a song called Manjericão, and this one is from the island of São Miguel, the biggest island in the Azores.
Manjericão da serra, oh manjericão da serra, oh manjericão deserto que não tem medo, oh manjericão deserto que não tem medo. Sapatinho da menina é bem bom para caçar, sapatinho da menina é bem bom para. Isto mesmo é amor, isto mesmo é amar, isto mesmo é amor, isto mesmo é amar. Amor, amor, amor do meu coração. Amor, amor, amor do meu coração. Ai, querer-te, sim, sim, sim. Ai, largar-te, não, não, não. Ai, querer-te, sim, sim, sim. Ai, largar-te, não, não, não. Faz a cama e dorme só. Faz a cama e dorme. Do arvoredo, oh manjericão debaixo do arvoredo. Sapatinho da menina é bem bom para caçar. Sapatinho da menina é bem bom para caçar. Isto mesmo é amor, isto mesmo é amar. Isto mesmo é amor, isto mesmo é amar. Amor, amor, amor do meu coração. Amor, amor, amor. Ai, querer-te, sim, sim, sim. Ai, largar-te, não, não, não.
And here we are back with the Portuguese American Hour on KGSD, 1600 AM, multicultural radio for the Valley and for the entire world because we are live stream. And the Portuguese American Hour, a product of the Portuguese Beyond Borders Institute at California State University, Fresno. We are on the traditional winter break at the university, but not for Justice and I. We just work round the clock, you know, yep. And Esmeralda back there as well.
Always
so,
going.
So they don't pay us well, but we're here all the time. Anyway, we are here as a service to, in this case, the Portuguese American community throughout the Valley. We're going to present to you our poem for this edition of the Portuguese American Hour. It is from a young man who is celebrating his 75th birthday here in a few months. He's a friend of mine. His name is Álamo Oliveira, full name José Henrique do Álamo Oliveira. He is from the island of Terceira, where he lives. He is the only one from his family left in Terceira. Everyone else is all his brothers and sisters and nephews and nieces. They all live in California or in Canada. So he is the only one from that family still in Terceira. He is a writer. He has published quite a few novels. He's published short stories. He's published essays. And he is a very prolific poet as well. This is a poem called The Farmer's Prayer. And it kind of tells a little bit, just to preface it a little bit, it tells a little bit of the Azores that it no longer is. But this is basically the Azores, as Professor Almanu Costa mentioned in today's interview, and as I've mentioned before, particularly the Azores of the 1950s, 60s, and even 70s. It was a very, very poor place, lots of economic challenges, and people lived with very, very little. And so, Farmer's Prayer. Lord, fantastic, deaf, mute, look over the husks that grows in our eyes and over the stomach of the children born from our nights of insomnia. Look over our yearly pig, the pregnant cow, out of season, the winds innating from your bad humor. Look over Joaquin, who bought 3 small fish to feed his 7 children. Look over Aunt Chica's and her well that quenches the thirst of the harvest and makes us believe in your fantasy. Look over the city, which is far, with its suits and neckties and its neon lights. May it not crush us, Lord, with its trucks of taxes. Amen. So it's kind of an interesting take on a particular time in the Azores. Loves lots of his poetry, but especially that one, Look Over Joaquin, or as we say in English, Joaquin, who bought 3 small fish to feed his 7 children. So not a lot of abundance. Even food had to be rationed. Mm-hmm. Years ago when there was, I recall, going to a friend of ours' home, and we tease about it because his grandmother would say, go ahead and eat, but eat lots of bread because bread would fill you up. She didn't want us to eat everything else that was on the table. Yeah. Eat lots of bread. So it depicts a time that no longer is, but certainly a time that many who are of Portuguese ancestry in the Valley, their parents or grandparents or their great-grandparents certainly had to live through these times. So that was our poem of the for this edition of the Portuguese American Hour. We're going to go to our third and last song from the group Tons de Azul. And this song is called Madrugada, which is, by the way, my favorite word in the Portuguese language and in Spanish because it means the same thing. I always, madrugada literally translates to like the wee hours of the morning, you know, which in English we would say pre-dawn or right before the morning, mm-hmm. like kind of a dawnish pre-dawn thing. And so in English doesn't sound really pretty at all, you know, dawn or pre-dawn. But in Portuguese and Spanish, I mean, madrugada, isn't that a beautiful word? So madrugada is the name of the song. It's traditionally from the island of São Miguel, and it's a group, Tons de Azul.
Cantando furo fofo de madrugada.
às portas de cada de madrugada. Dizem que o vento é norte de madrugada. Então o amor é mais forte de madrugada. Domingo não fui à missa de madrugada.
And that was the group Tons de Azul, de Madrugada, or just plainly Madrugada, which means the pre-dawn air time of the day, which we use a lot in the Portuguese language, and of course Spanish does as well. We don't usually say 4 a.m., 4 da manhã, we say 4 da madrugada. It's something that we use all the time, and when right before sun rises, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4 in the morning, we say madrugada. Let us turn into our community calendar, to our events that are coming up for the Portuguese-American community. We have a few of them, and first and foremost, we'd like to talk about the Portuguese Beyond Borders Institute at the California State University, Fresno. And an upcoming event on February the 20th, okay? So on February the 20th, the Institute will be celebrating its first anniversary. It was launched around the in February. Actually, it was launched February the 12th in Fresno here. And it will be at the California State University of Fresno at the Fresno State Campus. We will have a series of events throughout that day. We'll be announcing them, but please put that date in on your calendar. It is a Thursday, February the 20th, and for sure we will have a lecture about the Azores. We have the Director of Azorean Culture, the Director of Azorean Communities for the Governor of the Azores, Dr. Paulo Teves, who will be here to give a lecture about the Azores and the migration of Azoreans from the archipelago to the United States and to other parts of the world. So it's going to be a fascinating talk. That's one of the ways we'll celebrate. We're going to have a few other events throughout the day. So please put February 20th on your calendar. I want to mention again something that was already mentioned here one time, which is the Cabrillo Club. The Cabrillo Club of California and the Tulare County Cabrillo Club will be giving away scholarships. So if you are a student of Portuguese background, if you are a U.S. citizen or a permanent resident, if you have a GPA of 3.5 grade point average between the grades of 9th and 12th grades at high school, if you are graduating senior at a California high school here in the Valley, do fill out these scholarships. You can go online, cabrilloclub.org, Tulare County Cabrillo Club number 12, or for more information, call Mrs. Dulce Nunes at 559-688-8070. That's 559-688-8070. And the Tulare DES, Portuguese Hall in Tulare, their Holy Spirit Festa Committee, will be having a crab chipino feed. It is a big fundraiser for them in order to have the festa then in June. This event will be on Friday, January the 31st. The doors open at 6 o'clock. The dinner starts at 7. It's at the TDS Sopas Hall, 515 North I Street in Tulare. The cost as a fundraiser is $60 per person. For tickets or more information, you can call 559-909-2268 or 559-679-9072, or you can get a hold of me and I'll be more than happy to give you more information about this event as well. And that kind of wraps up our Portuguese American Hour for this edition. Every day now, 4 to 5.
Daily Dose.
Yes, right. And thank you, Jesus, for your help. Thank you, Esmeralda, for making us sound good and for running the board for us and for being here. And thank you all for listening. Hope to see you again on the next edition of the Portuguese American Hour, a product of the Portuguese Beyond Border Institute at California State University, Fresno. Take care.
This was a special program on Multicultural 1600 AM.
Este fue un programa pagado y solo refleja la opinión de sus anunciantes. Ahora continúa disfrutando de la programación de 1600 AM.